Wildlife Commission to issue 2 special antelope tags and 2 special mountain goat tags each year. One of the 2 tags would be auctioned and the other 2 tags would be raffled each year. The commission is already authorized to raffle 1 special mountain sheep tag a year. Funds are received from auctions and raffles would be set aside into special subaccounts for research and management of mountain sheep, antelope, and mountain goats. Department of Fish and Wildlife estimates that the raffles and auctions would raise at least $93,000 per hunt year for research and management of these unique species.
Okay. Thank you. I have Al Elkins and Ron Anglin. Would you like to come forward?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Al Elkins, representing the Oregon Hunters Association. House Bill 3232 is a bill that was sponsored at our request, and we would like to thank Representative Brown for his help in getting the bill printed and drafted and through the first substantive committee. This bill, as staff has said, would allow ODF&W to issue 1 special antelope tag and 1 special mountain goat tag to be auctioned each year, and 1 special antelope tag and 1 special mountain goat tag to be raffled each year. We believe, the Oregon Hunters Association believes, that providing special hunting tags through raffles and auctions, we will be able to generate revenues to help maintain these species. We currently do this with deer, elk, and bighorn sheep, and have found from the funding from the sale of the auction and raffle tags has led to improved management of these animals. The second thing this bill does, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, on page 4, beginning with section 9, line 44, it sets up 2 accounts, the mountain sheep sub-account and antelope sub-account, and a mountain goat sub-account within the department. And this would clarify in statute funds generated from the sale of these specialized tags, what they would be used for specifically. And we're as excited about that, having these accounts established, as we are about the tags themselves. So that concludes my testimony, Mr. Chair. I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Anglin.
For the record, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Ron Anglin, Wildlife Division Administrator with ODFW. The department supports this bill as it would provide us with a steady support of funding that we could use for antelope research and for mountain goat research. We've had very successful programs with bighorn sheep, and it has enabled us to take some very proactive steps as far as research and also in reestablishment of populations throughout the state. And we feel that these funds would provide us with the means to do that also. And the second exciting part about this is that it also would create the dedicated accounts for not only these 2 species, but also for bighorn sheep instead of the obligated accounts that we've had in the past. And we feel that that is a step in the right direction from an accountability standpoint. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'd be happy to answer your questions.
Thank you. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have to admit that this is an issue area heretofore shielded from my knowledge until I had a little chat with Mr. Elkins. And so I'm going to ask a question that will demonstrate what I don't know about this. Mr. Elkins gave me the summary of the prices at auction and at raffle for bighorn sheep. And it strikes me that if people, hunters, are willing to pay anywhere from $35,000 to $110,000 for these tags, why not simply set an arbitrary price tag on it? I mean, it seems to me that this is God's way of telling you got too much money to begin with. But why not, if the idea is to segregate this money for research, and I support that, why not just set the price at $75,000, and if people want to come forward to spend that kind of money, then you know what you're going to get, and you don't risk the potential of leaving 50% on the table if you allow it simply to go to auction.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, Oregon participates in kind of a national program for auctioning off of the tags, and it's pretty much market-driven. The years where the prices were up there over $100,000, things were good across the United States, and it generated a lot of income for all of the states. And as you can see, it's dropped since then, kind of steadied off. We don't know that how successful we would actually be in auctioning off a tag if we set a minimum bid price on that tag.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. It seems to me that it hasn't dropped off too dramatically, because in 2001-03, which I think by anybody's measure was the beginning and into the depths of the recession, it rebounded to 78,000 from a low of 30 in 1997. And I'm just using these as benchmarks. Have you done any research that says if we just pegged this at $75,000 or $100,000, that would have a significantly enough of a chilling effect that no one might come forward?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, my experience with the Bighorn Sheep Auction at National Finaz is that Oregon does not bring the same types of prices as a Montana, British Columbia, and an Alberta, and some of the desert bighorn species in Arizona and Mexico. And to set a fixed price on our tag as compared to some of those other states or other provinces or countries, we would not generate that kind of revenue, and I don't feel that we would be very successful in being able to auction our tag off at that fixed price.
Okay.
Representative Johnson, it strikes me that it wouldn't be a whole lot of fun just to write a check without having the excitement of the auction and all that going on.
I don't know, Mr. Chair, given that I would have to have a 45 in my head to write this kind of a check for this kind of activity to begin with. That maybe is all the excitement I need.
Well, a different class. Representative Krieger.
Mr. Chair, the reason they get those prices, they have free liquor before the auction.
There you go.
Those of you that haven't taken part. Ron, how many goat tags do you have that you offer statewide?
Mr. Chair, Representative Krieger, we offer 4 right now. And because of that, we do not feel that it would be in our best interest to auction a goat tag at this point in time. And we would only offer a raffle tag, which would make it more affordable for the citizens of Oregon to be able to buy into that and have a chance of drawing one of those tags.
Mr. Chair, I've always had a little bit of a problem with this program, clear back from the days when I was with the state police, where only the wealthy have the ability to get these special tags. And I've often wondered if they didn't have a statewide drawing for that tag at $10 or $15 to put your name in the hat, you wouldn't end up with just as many dollars for the program. But I'm not going to stand in the way of it, but I just think there needs to be a little bit more thought about the opportunity for a greater percentage of the hunters who provide the greater amount of dollars, and not just for doctors and attorneys. There's about 90% of them, that's who get it.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you. My colleague causes me to think of one other question. Given these breathtaking prices, I'd like to have something on the record about the assurances of integrity in the raffle process. And if you could describe a little bit about how you make sure that there's equity, or not equity, that it's done with integrity.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, we, depending on the year, will often video the actual drawing. We use the A&H drawing and the Bighorn Sheep drawing currently are done at the Oregon Hunters Association annual banquet. We solicit volunteers from the banquet who have not purchased any tags to physically draw the tags from the drum. We also solicit volunteers from the group that's there to stand as witnesses for each one of the drawings to ensure that we are putting all the tickets in the drums and that we're not doing anything out of the way or wrong. So we've set up a series of checks and balances at the actual raffle drawing itself. And it's up to the individuals. A lot of individuals buy tickets there and put their tickets directly into the boxes themselves to go into the drums. We get a lot of mail order, and everything comes into our office in headquarters and is cataloged by the particular raffle, and we're able to keep track of all that as it comes in, and it's all then carried to the annual banquet where the raffle occurs.
Thank you.
Senator Morgan.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Having been at the Oregon Hunters Association annual banquet and witnessing this, it is really quite exciting how this is all done, and I would suggest that Mr. Elkins invite the good representative to the next annual meeting so that she can experience it firsthand.
I'm Mr. Chair, that's,
I was just trying to picture what was on the menu, like Komodo dragon or something.
There's a lot of gun
raffles. Mr. Chair, I will invite her to the banquet, and she will have a very good time.
It's a great, it's a very good evening.
Yes, sir.
I should forewarn you, it's been one screwy day already. I don't know that I've ever seen a mountain goat. I'm sure they're cute. I'm right up there with Representative Johnson as to what it would take to get me to pay this kind of money to go kill one. But how much research do we do into mountain goats?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dukes, at the current time, we do very little. And we have the desire to do some food study, habit work.
Food study?
Determining the types of things that they eat, and then we can use that to identify suitable habitats in the state that we might wish to go back in and reestablish goat populations where they've been extirpated in the past.
Do
similar
we think
to
they
what
eat different kinds of things than domesticated goats do?
Chair Meserly, Senator Dukes, mountain goats are found at extremely high elevation, and they typically do not come down to lower elevations. And in fact, during the dead of the winter, they're quite often on wind-swept slopes above 9 or 10,000 feet, and they exist on lichens and other things that they can manage to find at those kind of elevations.
That's probably why I've never seen one.
So we would utilize
a flying plane. I don't get the idea.
No, we're not going to do that anymore. That's
right. So we would utilize the money to determine potential sites for reintroductions and the collaring studies and biological studies that go with that.
Mr. Chair, the problem I'm having is that this is an agency that has a lot of sub-accounts. And I'm starting to think that it's an agency that needs to be a whole agency. And here we're raising more money, not for the good of the order in the agency, but they all say basically the same thing. Propagation and conservation of whatever it is, mountain sheep, antelope, mountain goats, for research, development, management, enhancement, and sale or exchange of habitat, and for programs within the state that in the discretion of the commission most directly benefit antelope resources of the state or mountain goat resources. And I guess if somebody wants to go spend an obscene amount of money so that they can go up and shoot one of these animals or take pictures because they don't always shoot them, I guess that's okay with me. And I can understand where they might want it to go into conserving the critters, but I think these critters are all fairly healthy in this state, aren't they? I mean, that we're going to put money into deciding whether or not we should swap land so we can have more mountain goats. I'm struggling here.
Trust them.
How many accounts do we need?
Mr. Chair, if I may, Senator Dukes, the language you're having difficulty with is language that I drafted, and
it's the sub-accounts actually.
Yeah,
Al.
That's
sub-accounts.
That's the
sub-accounts, and they already exist.
That's the what I was trying to do here is.
What do you do with the money now? Because we already have the sub-accounts.
We wanted to make my intent, Mr. Chair, Senator Dukes, was to make sure that the money that was raised by the raffles and the auctions specifically would go to specific accounts to address the research needs and the study needs of those animals. I'm basing this on the past where money was raised. This is years ago, and we didn't know how much of that money went to for those animals specifically. So it was the intent of the Oregon Hunters Association to have those accounts set up so that we could track that money, that it went into that pot and that it went out of that pot for specific purposes related to those animals. That was my intent in establishing those subaccounts. Based on conversations I'd had with Rocky Mountain Elk and other organizations such that wanted to make sure we could trace the money.
Mr. Chair, the problem I guess I'm really running into, when we were talking about raising the hunting and fishing licenses, all of a sudden I had hunters coming to me saying, just make sure my hunting license money doesn't go to help fish hatcheries. And I got fish hatchery guys that don't want their fishing license money to go to help the hunters. But we have an agency that's supposed to be working out there for all of you. I don't care if you hunt or fish or both. I don't care if you climb up thousands of feet and you know, want to be able to look at an antelope. Whatever it is, the agency needs to be able to work for all of them. So I guess I'm just struggling with the sub-accounts that and
I think, Senator, we're quite frankly dealing with public trying to deal with some history in the department where there was some possible misuse of some of those funds, and maybe this is trying to clarify that, and I can understand that.
Misuse.
Well, if
did we transfer that to those out too?
One of the issues that we faced when we did the budget in the last legislative session were that all the sub-accounts weren't accounted for separately. They were all kind of smashed together, and it was just a lump of money, and you couldn't figure out what went in and what came out and where it went. So they now are all discrete funds that are accounted for separately from each other. But I would also submit to you that probably every agency budget that we do is full of these subaccounts. I mean, the DEQ budget that we're going to take up very shortly is full of special little accounts that fees go into to pay for certain services. And that I think that it is just a thing that we need to recognize as fairly normal in the way that we budget for things. And it certainly is complex. But I think also that people have expectations that if they're buying a certain thing or buying a certain permit or buying a certain license, that the money will go to support that program.
Senator Dukes?
I think it's different to have hazardous materials separate from air quality than to have the antelope distinct from the mountain goats, distinct from whatever the other one was, mountain sheep. I'm missing a mountain sheep. And I'm just, this is probably not one that I need to keep pursuing. It just seems to me that, and I'm sure it's too simplistic for some folks to say hunting is hunting. But, I mean, do we at least need three separate subaccounts for the antelopes and the mountain sheep and the mountain goats? We couldn't put them all in one? Really, I mean, it just seems like we're getting a little carried away with having all of them so that the antelope have a distinct fund from the sheep.
We got the man with the answer.
I believe last session the only account that had a trackable base of dollars in it was the commercial fish sub-account. And they knew what was in there, that industry, because they kept track of what was in it. And they were in correspondence back and forth with the old director, and the old director knew that they were watching it. And I think probably like our commercial fishermen, we both have them, definitely would like to see their money separate from, and maybe even in columns within industries and things, but we haven't gone to that yet, so it does have some value. I think it does have some value.
Any more questions, statements? Thank you. Next, I'd like to call Representative Brown if you're up to taking on this crowd. I tried to wear them down before I called you up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm State Representative Alan Brown from House District 10, and I want to thank the chairman and the committee for hearing this bill, and I would encourage its passage. And I want to assure you that I'm not here to put in my first bid on the mountain goat or even the antelope. I could neither afford nor have, given this stage in my life, I have to have, when I hunt for something, it's got to be a critter that comes to me, not me to the critter. This is a good bill. Like Representative Morgan, I was at the last Oregon Hunters Association meeting there in Roseburg. I guess it wasn't the last, but it was one a couple back. But when they auctioned off these tags, and it's amazing what some people will pay for a recreational opportunity. There were people calling in from, obviously from out of state, because they had them on the phone, and it's a big deal with hunters to be able to have these kind of opportunities. You can participate in a raffle, or you can put your name in the regular drawing process that goes on, but and many of these are, especially bighorn sheep, you only have one opportunity in a lifetime, and I'm not sure I'm going to live long enough to get my one opportunity, but I keep trying every year. Anyway, I'd urge your passage of the bill. It's a good measure, and it serves the hunting and fishing folks very well. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Questions?
I have a question.
Representative Morgan.
Representative Brown, you said you weren't going to be going after the mountain goat tag or the antelope tag, so do we assume then that mountain sheep are fair game for you?
No, they're not. Have you ever seen the terrain that they habit?
Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Close the public hearing and open the work session on House Bill 3232. You ready?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3232 to the full Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
You've heard the motion. Is there discussion of the motion? Objection to the motion?
Mr. Chair, I'll support this through the Ways and Means process, but I'm not so sure I'll support it on the floor.
Okay. Is there any other concerns? Without objection, motion carries.
Carriers?
Carriers. Let's see. Representative Krieger, you'd be a good candidate on the full and in the House, and I will carry it on the Senate. Close the work session and open the public hearing on Senate Bill 196A. And House Bill 2644A.
Senate Bill 196A establishes the Hazardous Waste Technical Assistance Fund. The fund is to be used by the Department of Environmental Quality for technical assistance and information on managing hazardous waste under the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency guidelines, primarily for small Oregon businesses. Bill limits DEQ's administrative and personnel costs to no more than 15% of the fund balance. Also directs DEQ to negotiate with EPA to gain acceptance of technical assistance services as part of the delegated program. The bill also requires hazardous waste generators to pay a one-time $200 fee to obtain an EPA identification number. It also sets an annual hazardous waste generation fee of $110 per metric ton of waste generated, with a maximum annual fee of $27,500. The fees are expected to generate about $574,000 per biennium. The revenue is assumed in the co-chair's budget and will be used to continue programs providing technical assistance. The bill also directs up to $250,000 in penalties assessed for violations of hazardous waste management activities to be deposited in the fund. You have in your packet the A5 amendment, which removes this provision from the bill.
Thank you very much.
House Bill 2644 extends the temporary schedule for monthly hazardous waste management fees to January 1, 2006. The bill also declares an emergency effective July 1 of 2003. These fees are attached to waste dumped at the Arlington landfill operated by Chemical Waste Incorporated. The facility competes with a hazardous waste landfill in Idaho. The Oregon and Idaho Departments of Environmental Quality have tried to coordinate the respective fees to prevent unfair competition for hazardous waste disposal. You have before you the A2 amendment, which will continue the fees now in effect through March 1st of 2004, and then establish a new fee from March through January 2006. The new fee is reduced from what was originally proposed. This lower fee is assumed in the co-chair's budget that you'll be considering tomorrow. The amendment also authorizes the Department of Environmental Quality to review records related to waste received at the Arlington facility to help determine the fees for hazardous waste in the future.
Thank you. Any questions of staff, Senator Dukes?
How does this then compare to Idaho's if we do this?
I'll let the agency describe that to you.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you. I'd like to call Dick Pedersen. Jimmy Dick, are you testifying on both bills?
Mr. Chair, yes, I am, but I think the order by which I would testify on the second bill, I wouldn't go first on that one.
Okay, that's
okay. All right. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, good afternoon. My name, for the record, my name is Dick Pedersen. I'm the administrator of the Land Quality Division for the Department of Environmental Quality, and I'm here to explain to you House Bill 196, and what I've passed out is just a fact sheet on Senate Bill 196, and what I'd like to do is keep my remarks very short, but what I'd like to explain the hazardous waste program just very briefly, some of the funding issues and program issues that have arose, and how 196 is intended to address some of those issues. I will start out by saying that the hazardous waste program for the state of Oregon is a very mature program. It's been around for a while. We get lots of kudos for the work in the program and very few complaints on how we implement it. Really what it's designed to do is to for the reduction and safe management of hazardous waste in the state of Oregon. For example, we permit one of the only hazardous waste landfills, or the only hazardous waste landfill in Oregon and Washington, and you're going to hear a little more about that on the second bill that you talked about today. Also, we permit the Umatilla incinerator out in Hermiston that's gearing up for incinerating biological and chemical waste. The Oregon program is really two parts. One is what we might call the regulatory part, and it is a delegated program delegated to us from the Environmental Protection Agency, whereby we implement the federal requirements of the federal program, and that's more the inspections, the compliance, the enforcement side of the program and the permitting side that I mentioned before. The second part of the program is really something that Oregon has worked on over the course of the years and worked with the legislature to move more towards a business assistance side of the program to help businesses and others through these complicated regulations that are on the book for people to manage and reduce hazardous waste. So that part of the program is to help businesses comply with regulations in a non-enforcement regulatory way. And that's accomplished through visits to the sites and workshops and that sort of thing. It really is an excellent approach. It's worked very well. It's definitely in line with sort of the business approach and economic development side of what we're trying to do at DEQ, and it really is liked by everybody. So that's just an overview of the program. Moving on to some of the funding problems associated with the program, part of the hazardous waste program is funded by fees that are collected at the facility in Arlington. And that facility is one whereby waste is hazardous waste can be disposed of out there, and DEQ gets a fee from that waste that's disposed. We, over this biennium, are collecting about 40% of what was in our budget for that, for what we're expecting to come into that facility. There's a number of reasons for that are hard to figure out. It could be tied to certainly a big downturn in the aluminum industry that generated waste that went to went to that facility in large volumes, and it certainly could be a downturn of the economic climate whereby less waste is being moved from a site out because of the cost maybe associated with that. Also, so that's one site. The other issue in terms of funding is the fees that we collect on generators and of hazardous hazardous waste, and from those that are permitted for hazardous waste have been flat since 1997. So obviously, over the course of the years, those dollars would buy less in terms of agency support to the program. Well, we at DQ haven't just come to the legislature and said we need more money, we need more money, or we need more fees in this regard. What we've done over the course of the years is we've reduced our FTEs supporting this program. Back in 1997, we had about 60 FTEs for the whole program, and now we're down to about 45. We've worked hard with EPA and others to look at our program and really feel that we're at a bare minimum in our ability to really do the job of the delegated program, to do the number of the inspections that we need and that sort of thing. So we at DQ and others that have helped us through this feel like we've really gotten to the bottom in terms of the amount of support for this program to do it as a delegated program and to provide the assistance that we need. So we took this on very early in this biennium, and we took it on with a work group of folks, and on that fact sheet that I handed out to you, the back page shows the folks that are on that work group that worked really hard with us to try to come up with a solution. And the first look at wasn't just at what kind of money are we going to need to solve this problem. It's continuing to look at efficiencies, and we did create some more efficiencies in the program, but we also realized that we needed to provide the funding to continue the support. So Senate Bill 196 certainly is a product of that work group, and that's what came forward to the legislature this year. So there's three main things that are in Senate 196-A. One is there's a fee increase on the generators of hazardous waste, and that fee increase amounts to about 22% of the amount that was collected in 1997. And this was it's commensurate with the cost of living since that time, and it is a fee that industry can support and has supported through the work group, and I hopefully you'll hear about that later on when I'm done. Also, there's another fee that is contemplated in this legislation in 196, and that is to charge $200 for a one-time hazardous waste ID fee. And this is looking forward, not looking back, as far as what we charge that fee on. And what it's for, that hazardous waste ID, it's for generators of hazardous waste that need to transport hazardous waste. They need to get this manifest transportation number that we would issue. So we would charge about $200 per ID number, and we calculate there will be about 200 of those a year looking forward.
But that's just a one-time fee.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, that is correct. Just to follow up to what, but we get about 200 new ones a year, so that as far as our crystal ball can tell us, that would continue about 200 per year into the future. The second part of the bill that gets at more of the business assistance side is to have the stakeholders in the work group that have identified and DEQ to work closely with EPA to get that business assistance side of our program more upfront and recognized by the federal agencies, so it really does become an integral part of our program, not only here in Oregon, but the delegated program, so that we can start counting our visits and our inspections to show that we are reducing hazardous waste, which is the objective, certainly, of the federal program. And that to us is really important. And backing up, the reason we want to do that is right now EPA is very concerned about the level of our program to support the delegated program, just the delegated side, whether we are not meeting our inspection requirements because of the lack of personnel that hopefully 196 and other parts of our budget will shore up. So we want to work hard with EPA to get them to accept that more. Also, another part of at least if I understood the earlier version of the bill was to provide civil penalty money to go to business assistance. And just for your information, that was the reason we did that and the reason the work group recommended that is because part of the disposal fee at Arlington also supported the business assistance side. So the work group was really looking for ways to pull money back in to support the business assistance side of that. When it came out of the Ag Committee, it certainly was thought the best approach for that was to use it for contracting rather than DEQ staff to provide that service, and we certainly agreed with that as it was passed out of committee. And so for 196, certainly what is a downside for not passing it from our perspective? And I think one danger certainly is that we're at danger of losing the delegated program if we continue to erode that part of the program, and EPA very concerned about our ability to implement it. And so obviously that's something that DEQ is not in favor of, and certainly we have heard strongly from the stakeholders that they're not in favor of that at all. Our concern, too, is the business assistance side. That really is a heart of doing things in a very close way with business and working with business on these complicated regulations. And we think it is very important to DEQ and to the state of Oregon to continue that approach to hazardous waste. Everyone seems to be for it. Everybody appreciates it. It certainly takes a big burden off of businesses that have to look at these regulations, and to help them in a non-enforcement compliance way, in a technical way, really what does avoid penalties, and it avoids loss of control, if you will, of hazardous waste that could get us into bigger costs and trouble down the road. So certainly we urge your passage of 196, and thanks for the opportunity to come here today, and I can try to answer your questions that you might have.
Would you like to run through 2644, and then we'll open up for questions on both?
Yeah, well, 2644, which is the bill to modify the fee structure at Chem Waste. We work very closely with Chem Waste on creating the fee structure. We've done it over the years, and we've worked hard with them and agree and support the increases that are proposed there.
Okay, thank you. Representative Johnson.
Thank you. I want to make sure that I understand what you just said. In your testimony with respect to SB 196, I think you said that there were 200 new hazardous waste applicants a year.
Mm-hmm.
Did I hear you correctly?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, what that is that's people that are applying for a manifest to ship hazardous waste. So if someone needs to ship it off their site, they have to get an ID number, which we would give to them.
Okay, then I misunderstood, because with respect to 2644, what I was trying to get to was why there was a reduction in the fees, and your testimony had led me to believe that it had to do, plus the staff summary, with competitive pressures from Idaho, and yet it seemed to me in your testimony about 196, you were saying that there was no shortage of people needing to deal with hazardous waste, and I couldn't understand.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't reconcile those two things.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, comparing 2644 and 196 is a little bit of apples and oranges.
Okay, yeah.
2644 deals with a facility at Chem Waste, and they're authorized to accept waste from all over the from outside of Oregon and that sort of thing. We issue permits and freeze and generator fees for people just in Oregon who may choose to ship their waste or handle it in a number of different ways.
Thank you. That was helpful.
Any other questions? Yes,
how, with these fees, how will we compare to Idaho?
Senator Messerly, Senator Dukes, I'm not sure about 196, which again deals with generator fees. 2644, the other one, is one of the intents of the way the 2644 is written anyways, make sure that we are compatible with Idaho. I mean, we're trying to agree not to out-compete each other, and so I don't know exactly how their fee structure looks in terms of dollar amounts, but I believe that the way we've structured this, Idaho feels comfortable with how we're moving forward with 2644.
Now, if we were to raise our fees, does that mean that more hazardous waste would go to Idaho?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dukes, as far as 2644 goes, we certainly don't believe so. I think it's just a matter of choice for people on where they go. If we were to raise fees at Arlington for the types that we're talking about, I do think, and I'm sure representatives of Chem Waste are here to talk about that, but I think they would have some serious issues about being way out-competed by Idaho and certainly impacting the facility's ability to even operate and potentially close.
Arlington's
facility. There's another hazardous waste
there's
facility in Idaho.
I think that was a good thing. I'm not saying I'm mm-hmm. one of them. I'm just... Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Thank you. I'd like to turn our attention to the A5 amendments. I think I have a big problem with that, given that we just talked about a bill, that we just passed it out of here unanimously, that has discrete fees being plowed back into programs that provide assistance for different, in that case it was animal species, which I don't see as particularly different from this situation. And I don't know why it is we would want to do other than to put those, well, I can think of one reason, but why it is that we would want, as a policy question, to do other than to put the fees generated from the fines, generated the civil fines, back into the program. And it seems to me that also part of the theme of this legislative session has been to talk about those things that we can do to make it easier for business in a regulatory environment. And if I understood your testimony correctly, you're saying that the fees or the fines that would build up in this account, rather than stripping them out and putting them into the general fund, that they would be there and available to business or for your agency to access on behalf of business to deal with this complex regulatory environment. Mm-hmm. I can't make a case for why we would want to take those fees out. And I presume that the agency's preference would be to keep them inside the fund and continuing to provide technical assistance to business.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, certainly the agency has a good record of being able to use penalty money for its parts of the program, and with the continued erosion of support to business assistance in the hazardous waste program, we feel that providing that support through that mechanism would continue us on a path to certainly do the kind of program that we're trying to do for Oregon with businesses. And I know in the context outside of 196, we're certainly looking at business assistance part of our overall funding package and others, but certainly that's a key part of our program. And with loss of revenues, we're seeing that kind of support go away.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. Looking at the eclectic group that was gathered as your hazardous waste work group members, mm-hmm. I mean, you really have the spectrum of folks represented in this group, the environmental community, the business community. What was the sentiment of this work group with respect to any civil penalty staying inside the program and being available for business assistance?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, I think generally the work group thought that as a viable option to help shore up the program. I think there was concern on the work group's part about it being used to fund DEQ staff, and that's why the changes were made. And we felt that providing contract services for this kind of help, working with the work group on how we would do that was a viable option. So again, providing that kind of support through contracting we felt was viable, and I think the work group generally felt okay with it. Again, concern about just populating DEQ with FTEs was a concern for some, for sure.
But once the deal was reached with the consensus of the work group, then the work group generally reflected that it was okay to keep those fees inside the program, fines inside the program.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, the work group actually certainly endorsed putting moving forward with a with a 196 sort of structure. I don't know if there was a general consensus vote on doing that, but there was certainly general support for moving forward with this kind of fee structure. There was a lot of discussion after that when we got in front of the Ag Committee in looking at fee structures, and a lot of discussion about what was appropriate use of civil penalty. And again, the outcome of that, what came out of the Ag Committee anyway, was looking at using contract support.
Thank you.
Two things, Representative. I want to point out my conversations with co-chairs was obviously the loss of general fund, number one. Number two was at least the perception that the enforcement agency could be benefiting from the regulatory action that would be taken, and the perception that that could be self-serving.
May I just respond? I think that we shouldn't lose track of the fact that for the first time in a long time, we have an agency that seems to be working very cooperatively with business and a director who is doing an admirable job in trying to help streamline permitting. I hate to see an agency rewarded for good behavior by having money stripped out of a program. Secondly, I sat in this very chair this morning, and we had the opportunity to recapture $350,000 worth of money for the general fund and passed. I understand where the co-chairs are headed, and if part of this whole process is the give and take between competing policy decisions. I just think we shouldn't lose track of the fact that we have an agency that's functioning pretty well under the very capable leadership team that's there, and I just don't like to reward good behavior by damaging a program.
And I, just to counter that, I have not heard any discussion that this was in any way meant to reflect any disagreements with the management of the department. Matter of fact, I've heard a lot of very positive comments. Cindy Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The general fund that I'm assuming, and please correct me if I'm wrong, that it was a general fund that went into the business assistance program previously. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, there's several parts of this. 196 really looks at, as it might relate to general fund, is the penalty money. The overall agency budget has, I think, $1.24 million of general fund supporting hazardous waste, of which 800,000 of it, or roughly 800,000 of it goes to business assistance. Again, that's not directly part of the Senate Bill 196, but more of the overall budget.
Then I guess I'm getting confused, mm-hmm. because you proposed to use penalty assessments to fund the business assistance piece of this. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, part of it. It doesn't. It generates. What came out of committee was to cap the civil penalty money at I think it is $500,000 a biennium, and so that would only fund a portion of the business assistance. And what that portion is really replacing, Representative Morgan, is the disposal fee at Arlington. Part of that did support business assistance, so not all of it did. General fund supported business assistance too, but part of that Arlington money supported business assistance. So we lost that revenue. So we're really looking at augmenting that lost revenue at the civil penalty route.
How much money goes into the business assistance program? Total funds.
If you'll bear with me for just a second. I can't put my hands on it right now. I'll keep looking, but generally The business assistance approach funds about 10 or 11 FTEs, and it's about $11 million program, and I'd say a quarter of it is business assistance. That's just off the top of my head, so I'll keep looking here.
So somewhere between $3 and $4 million.
Right.
Mr. Chair, if I may, Stephanie Halleck, the director of DEQ. As Dick correctly stated, there are between 10 or 11 FTE total in the business assistance part of the hazardous waste program. There's a relationship between the civil penalty money that is being requested, as Dick also correctly stated, to take the place of Arlington fee money that we have lost. So that's one piece of funding those 10. Instead of having some of those 10 funded by Arlington fee money, they would in theory be funded by this redirected civil penalty money. So that's one component of it. There is also, you've heard the $800,000 figure mentioned. It's actually, I think, $808,000. And 4-point-something FTE that has been proposed to be cut from the Hazardous Waste Business Assistance Program in the co-chair's budget. So our concern about this particular component of Senate Bill 196 is that if this penalty money is not redirected and to support part of the Hazardous Waste Business Assistance Program, and if the cut in the co-chair's budget also stands, that the Hazardous Waste Business Assistance Program drops from between 10 and 11 FTE to between 5 and 6. It's relatively cut in half if both of those things are to happen. And therefore, we would be providing half of the business assistance that we are currently able to provide. And I hope that gets to your question.
So can you give me the amount of money that goes into the program at the present time? I mean, I'm getting FTE numbers, and I'm getting cuts in FTE, but I'm not getting any dollar numbers.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, I did find it. On the business assistance side, the 0103 adopted budget for business assistance is about $2.83 million. Looking at...
and what was the period for that, 0103?
0103, that was the adopted budget.
The adopted budget,
correct.
So that was coming out of the regular session?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And where are you at now?
Right now, we're without the penalties, we're at about $2.34
million. And meaning that's where you're at the end of special session 6?
No, that's just backing out if we were not to add the civil penalty money to the program.
Okay, so
we're
looking
forward
to
both real
just under $500,000.
Right, that's
just
correct.
Under half $1 million short on the program. Okay, I see where you're coming from.
And how does that relate to the governor's budget?
I believe the governor's budget, if I'm recalling right, we budgeted is right at about $2.34 million, because we backed out. If you remember right, we said based on 0103, we lost 40% of the revenue, or we were collecting about 40% of the fees from Arlington. So we projected 50% of what the 0103 budget was for Arlington, just to hopefully be safe on that.
So you're looking at roughly a 17% cut in the program revenue wise. If you're getting a 17% cut, why are you losing half the people?
Well, if I might, Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, when Director Halleck was talking, I believe she was talking, if the $808,000 of general fund that supports business assistance were to go away, then we would only have $1.6 million roughly in the program, resulting in about half of the FTE, from a little less than half the FTE from what was in the 0103 adopted budget.
So in the governor, I mean, in the co-chairs, what's the amount of the reduction that's proposed?
I think I just sent staff to get those figures for us. Okay. That Judy James.
At this point, the co-chairs have not finalized that budget discussion. But at this point, the $800,000 is still there.
It's still
the program.
There.
The only thing that would be lost by not having the $250,000 in penalties money is the loss that's already existing because of the Arlington fees being down.
If I might, that's $250,000 per year, so it'd be $500,000 per biennium.
Yeah, follow-up, Representative Morgan?
Well, I don't understand what you just said. Say that again.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, LFL staff just mentioned $250,000 in civil penalty money. That's per year. That's in the bill. And so it's $500,000 per biennium.
And actually, the estimate we have based on your last fees is only about $350,000 per biennium.
Yes, if I might, that's about how much we actually collect in hazardous waste penalty per biennium.
Further questions?
I'm still looking at my numbers here. If you want to go ahead, go ahead.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Duke.
Sort of. Until we all have different learning styles here. But I think I followed most of what you were telling Representative Morgan. I'm trying to figure out if we were to do the dash fives, you would have $350,000 less per biennium to do what?
500 less.
Well, that was 500,000 until staff weighed in.
It's we're estimating.
Then
that
it
that
went down. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dukes, the $350,000 that you had mentioned is sort of a track record of what we would be collecting for hazardous waste penalties. The cap in the bill is $500,000. What we very directly to
you're getting aggressive. Maybe you can get
well,
there, but short of that.
To directly go to your question, that money would be used for providing business assistance, which means technical assistance to generators of hazardous waste to help them through the regulations, holding workshops, that sort of thing, the business assistance side of the program.
And without that, now, these fines are currently going into the general fund. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And so this money would offset other reductions that you have received?
Yes. Mr. Chair, Senator Dukes, as I mentioned, some business assistance money that comes to the program comes from the fees that come to us from Arlington for the disposal of hazardous waste.
I noticed that on the fiscal.
Right. And so because of the reduced revenue that's coming from there, 40% of what we budgeted for in 0103, we've lost that part of that revenue to business assistance. So we're trying to make that up through this methodology.
Because of the reduction in fees.
Because of a decline in revenue. There aren't as many people dumping waste, so they don't have as many fees collected.
It's an economic development issue.
You're right. We work hard on one side, and we're surprised when it shows up on the other side.
Did you have a follow-up, Senator?
I don't think so.
I would assume that Peterson, that as the program is working, I'm sure it is. I mean, it's a very positive program.
Those fines would be reducing as time goes on, shouldn't they? I mean, that is would be your expectation.
Mr. Chair, that would be my expectation. And in fact, if we quit providing business assistance, I guess my theory would be the fines would be going up. And so I think certainly with a cap on the fines and our enforcement track record and just it's very very described that we don't see any change one way or another unless providing business assistance causes them to go down rather than us trying to generate more fees by providing more penalties.
Representative Morgan.
You mentioned that you have other programs where penalty money funds the program. Can you talk to us about that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, sure. The spill program and the underground storage tank program primarily penalties go to the program. Regarding the underground storage tank program, I don't have the amounts, but it's very closely watched by stakeholders, and certainly they've been supportive of that to make sure that we don't abuse that in terms of a lot of penalties, but it has worked well. The tank side, certainly their stakeholders are as concerned about losing our aspects of the program and having the federal agencies come in. So that was something that happened, I think it was last session or maybe two sessions ago, and it seems to have worked very well, and it hasn't resulted in increased penalties, if you will, but it has helped help the program.
I think that there are legitimate concerns about having penalties go to fund programs, and one of the things that's important to all of us is to have as much integrity in the process as possible. And again, I don't want to have anyone think in any way that the department is acting in other than exemplary fashion, because that's not the case at all. But I'm wondering if, in terms of budget impacts, if there is any difference functionally between having the fines go into the program or having the fines be washed through the general fund and having an equivalent amount of general fund come in. Surely it can make no difference to the operation of the program.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, what I would say is if it's sort of a zero-sum game, if you will, in terms of the amount of money that's coming with the program, I believe it wouldn't have an impact that way. And again, the current level of funding from general fund for the program, this is in addition to that. It's not part of that, if you will.
And could I have one more follow-up? Given the fact that, you know, the whole thing kind of is... I guess the bottom of the pyramid here is the fact that the aluminum industry, because of the electric rates, has become non-competitive and isn't filling up the dump and generating the dumping fees that it used to. Are you seeing in other areas of your business assistance program, because of the downturn, a decrease in the amount of requests you're getting for technical assistance?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, it's quite interesting to me, but in fact, the volume of work that we have has actually increased if you look at the number of generators of hazardous waste. I don't want to confuse everybody, but there's about 200 large quantity generators, there's about 400 small quantity generators, and there's about 3,000 what we call conditionally exempt generators that are exempt from the requirements, if you will. And that number, in fact, that 3,000 has grown. And those are the people that really look for help and support so that they don't get in trouble. So our workload in terms of numbers of facilities has actually grown over the years. So I know our business assistance side, as it seemed to help people out, they really get a lot of requests for this. I just went to a seminar not too long ago that we sponsored as part of this, and there was I'd say over 70 people there at least, just wanting to know more about the regulations, be able to ask questions and that sort of thing to help those small businesses through that. So it seems to me I haven't seen a downturn in requests on that side.
Mr. Chair, do you generate any kind of information about the number of people that are using the program over time and how much money you're actually using to deal with each of those people that are requesting assistance?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, we certainly do have some information I can try to get back to you. I don't know the detail of it or the level of detail. We track how many assistance visits we do. We track how many seminars we do. The number of people that are that sort of thing. We could provide that information. If I remember right, we did. We're doing somewhere between 500 and 700 business assistances visits a year. So that comes to mind. But I could get some more accuracy to those numbers.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you very much. Next, I'd like to call Mr. Barrows and Mr. Higginson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Dave Barrows, representing Chemical Waste Management here, speaking primarily on House Bill 2644, which is our bill. With me is Mr. Don Higginson, an attorney in Portland who has been for many years a recognized expert in this field and is legal counsel to the facility, the hazardous waste facility at Arlington. House Bill 2644 is a bill, frankly, that's never been down to Ways and Means in all the years that its prior configurations have come through the legislature. Representative Morgan may remember having heard this subject in her Environment and Energy Committee days in the House. If I may, Mr. Chairman, let me just take a moment and kind of set the context of this bill. In 1985, this legislature imposed the first hazardous waste disposal fee at the facility, $10 a ton, regardless of the type of waste. Subsequent session made it $20, and then a subsequent session added another $10 for specific kinds of programs, including small business assistance, making it $30 a ton. And that's the way it worked until about the middle of the 90s. It was $30 a ton. It was $30 a ton in Boise. So we were very comparable. In the middle of the 90s, the Idaho legislature decided to go a different direction, and they created a series of different fees for different kinds of wastes. All, remember, this is all hazardous waste now. And that's what you see on the first page of the A2 amendments, the second page, and the top of the third page. And that's existing law, and that's the fee system that we have in place today. I'll talk about the one change that we're proposing in just a moment. If this bill fails to pass, what will happen is on January 2nd of 2004, all these varying fee schedules will go away, and we will, in Oregon, go back to $30 a ton. If that occurs, Idaho will have all these lower fees for various kinds of wastes, and we will be at $30 a ton. Our facility will not be able to compete in that environment. All Oregon hazardous waste generators will take their waste to Boise, and we will be out of business. And I don't want to sound hysterical or anything, but that's just, we would be so far out of the marketplace as to be unable to continue. The facility, as has been pointed out earlier, is kind of a tenuous facility anyway because of the huge diminution of aluminum potliner that we've seen happen because of the energy rates, Russia dumping aluminum on the world market, et cetera, et cetera. So the amount of volume of waste coming into Arlington has diminished dramatically, and that has resulted in less money coming to the department.
Chair, can I ask some questions? Maybe, Dave, paint for me a bigger hazardous waste in the nation or the Northwest or something. Because I know we're receiving all kinds of stuff at Arlington that comes from outside. Other than the fact that the company might go out of business, which I don't see as a good thing, I'm trying to get my hands around the fact that we wouldn't be hauling all this hazardous waste into Oregon, which didn't sound like such a bad thing to me. So paint me a bigger picture, maybe, of transport of waste and how Arlington plays into that bigger picture.
Be happy to. Mr. Chairman, Senator Dukes, Arlington is the primary disposal facility for hazardous waste generated in Oregon and Washington. Mm-hmm. It is the only public facility available. Some companies have their own disposal operations limited to their own waste that they generate. But we are the one kind of open door, come on in facility for both states. We do get some waste from other states outside of Oregon and Washington, but those are the primary sources of waste coming into that facility. And waste generally has diminished in this country. There has been a strong effort to create less hazardous waste. That's kind of the hierarchy that all the agencies have, the EPA has, which is produce less, recycle, those kind of things. And down at the bottom of the list is dispose. And so it's working, which is the good news, as you point out, Senator Dukes. The bad news is there's less coming in, and so the fees income to the department and the income to the company has diminished. And the company is certainly not going to go out of business.
Okay.
This, and if I said that, I misspoke, and I apologize. Okay. What I meant to say was, and I'll say it again if I may clearly, is this particular facility, the Arlington facility, is the one that is in some jeopardy. It is a smaller facility than many others around that other our company and other companies have. And so it was heavily, heavily, I won't say dependent, but the aluminum industry potliner waste stream was a big piece of who we were and what we were able to generate. And that's just kind of gone away, and hopefully it'll come back. Hopefully aluminum industry will come back in Oregon. But until it does, we're probably in some trouble.
The piece I'm still missing here is it sounds like if we don't do the bill and the $30 fee comes back, then Oregon companies are taking their waste well and not dumping it in Oregon. And I'm assuming there must be some transportation costs that would go up. There's got to be a downside here, and I haven't
right.
heard it
well,
yet.
And Mr. Chairman, Senator Dukes, if I could, the fees that you see before you in the existing law, the one that has the sunset on it, basically are a little bit higher in Oregon than they are in Idaho for similar waste streams, and that is because of the transportation differential, Senator Dukes. You're absolutely right. But if you take a waste that is currently paying $7.50 a ton when it comes to our facility and all of a sudden say to that generator, you're going to have to pay $30, and Idaho only charges $6 or $5 or whatever it is, and Don has all that material if we want to get that specific. But the point is it may be a little lower in Idaho, but the transportation differential between, let's say, $6 in Idaho and $30 at Arlington, the train will go right past Arlington on its way to Boise.
Okay, then bottom line, tell me why that's a bad thing.
Well, the bad thing is we want to encourage proper disposal, Mr. Chairman, Senator Dukes, of hazardous waste. We want to do it in the most economic, cheapest way for our industries to make them competitive in national and world markets, because they have to get rid of this material. Having this facility, AOI has always come to this to the committee that has this bill and said we support it. American Electronics Association, the people who are the major generators of hazardous waste, think that Arlington is a positive, appropriate way for them to deal with the problem they have in their manufacturing process, not a problem, an outcome of their manufacturing, because it's cheaper.
Mr. Barrows, let me clarify.
Not all the waste that goes into Arlington is on rail.
That's true.
So a lot of the waste within Oregon, my guess is, would be trucked on farther, which would add considerably more to the cost than extending the rail traffic. Is that a fair statement?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I am certainly not an expert on costs of transportation of materials, but I think as the distance becomes greater, the efficiencies of getting onto rail is apparent, and I think we would see more on rail and less probably on shorter haul 137 miles to Arlington trucks. Now, if I may, one other thing, Mr. Chairman, on the A2 amendments. The original committee in the House that had this bill adopted the -1 amendments, and that made it the A engross bill. Frankly, the way they were drafted was confusing to people, and no one was absolutely certain how those would work. And without taking the committee's time to explain why, you'll recall, Mr. Chairman, I came to you and asked for a note to mother, and we had the identical fee structure developed in the A2 amendments. It's just clearer. And now the department and we and everybody understands the rule of the rules of the road, and they have endorsed it. The industry has endorsed it. Everybody understands. The new fee schedule, the only addition or change to the existing situation, is found on page 4, the lower half of the page. And this is for, frankly, for waste that is sitting out on people's land, businesses' land. And it is an effort on our part and the department's part to try to encourage, to incent people, because the fees are reasonable, to bring this waste to the facility rather than just leaving it sitting there at the plant.
Let me ask Senator Dukes, can we allow them to finish their presentation?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, yes. With all of the hubbub that's gone on over the years over Arlington, as good a facility as it is, there's been controversy, and I keep thinking I must miss some, and I'm sure as soon as I leave there, somebody will tell me, enlighten me, please.
Hey, why don't you finish your presentation then?
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm, with all due respect, I'm not sure what the controversy has been relative to Arlington. Remember, there are two facilities in Arlington.
There's a lot of hazardous waste in Oregon.
Right. There's hazardous waste and there's a solid waste facility, both at Arlington. And we're only talking in this case about the hazardous waste facility. Yeah. But our purpose is to try, this company generates not one ounce of hazardous waste. We try to take other people's hazardous waste and dispose of it in an appropriate, safe, DEQ-approved facility. That's what we're about. And so,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, all I'm going to ask you, if you please adopt the A2s, which clarify the language, wipe out the dash ones and put in their place the dash twos, and move this forward because. Absent the passage of this bill, we're in serious trouble. Thank you.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I just need a little bit more help in defining what the serious trouble piece of this is. Serious trouble in that the company will fail. Serious trouble in that people will have hazardous waste and debris around in their yards and not in their shop areas and not deal with it appropriately. What's the trouble that we'll be in?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, the trouble could be, and may well be, that if we go to a fee structure on hazardous waste disposal that is so out of line with the Idaho facility, and that's what will happen on January 2nd, absent the passage of this legislation, meaning $30 a ton, all waste, that the ability of the Arlington facility to be the recipient of hazardous waste from Oregon and Washington will be greatly diminished, probably to the point where the current 50 jobs that they have there at that facility would probably disappear. Now, the company will not go bankrupt. Chemical Waste Management is a subsidiary of Waste Management, Inc., which owns the solid waste facility there, and is a huge national waste disposal company. But in the hazardous part will not go away. This facility may go away. It's just there are economies of scale.
The hazardous waste piece of the Arlington facility.
There is one facility that does hazardous waste, and that's all they do. And then a quarter of a mile down the road is Columbia Ridge Solid Waste Landfill, owned by the same companies. We call this one waste management. We call this one chemical waste management. And they're licensed differently. They come under different sections of the federal code. Their requirements are different. The company, well, in a sense, are not going away. The little hazardous waste disposal facility at Arlington could be in trouble.
Well, Mr. Chair.
So then, if I understood your testimony correctly, in no small measure, this has to do with the volume of not receiving a lot of aluminum, the downturn in the aluminum industry.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, the aluminum industry and the and the advancements that have been made by other industries in reducing the volume of hazardous waste they produce.
So let's assume that this committee acts on this bill and moves it forward and makes it all the way through the process, and the aluminum industry rebounds. Then what happens?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, there is now more money coming into the facility. We will pass that on to the Department of Environmental Quality. They will have it to do with as they would any other additional monies that come. We might have, Mr. Chairman, God forbid, another Exxon Valdez. And if you look at the disposal volumes at our facility 6-7 years ago, whenever that tragedy occurred, there was a huge spike in volumes coming into the facility. And the reason was that the oil company decided that for public relations purposes, the only reason they did it, I'm convinced, is public relations purposes, they sent all the rags, the uniforms, the walk, everything, the booties, to our facility, where they could have, under the law, under federal law and Alaska law, put it in the municipal solid waste landfill for not much money. But they trucked, you know, they boated it and trucked it and trained it and hauled it down here and put it in our facility, and it resulted in a ton of money for us and for the department. Now, they still, I mean, they can't just go spend it. Clearly, the legislature doesn't permit that. But, I mean, we don't know what's out there. We don't know what the future holds, but we do know it's a diminishing thing.
I need to break in. Yeah. We've got, I want to hear from you, sir, and we have two other people okay. signed up to speak, and I would like to move this bill at least today. I really don't want to move this bill today, but let's get the public testimony at least.
Chair Messerly, members of the committee, I was just here to answer questions to support Mr. Barrows, but, you know, If there's any detail on the bill in particular, because I drafted most of the language, I'd be happy to respond to that.
Okay. And if I could just add, Mr. Chairman, on 196, because I'm also signed up on that, we supported that in the Senate Ag Committee. Spent a good bit of time with Senators Fisher and Beyer about it. It is an important bill because keeping the delegated program at the state DEQ rather than having it revert to the Region 10 EPA is a huge money saver for our facility. It's a huge money saver for Oregon businesses. They don't have to truck to Seattle, and it moves much faster at DEQ. Everything that Representative Johnson and the rest of you have said about the department here, we would echo. So we hope you'll help that.
Sure.
First off, Mr. Hagenson, could you just identify yourself for the record?
Oh, pardon me. Chair Messerly, members of the committee, I'm Don Hagenson. I'm attorney in private practice, and I've done work for chemical waste management since 1985.
Then I have one question. If the waste is not going into Arlington, it's, I assume, either going to Idaho or it's sitting on site in someone's facility until they get a bigger blob to send. Isn't it true that the risk of that hazardous waste to the environment or to the people around it is because it's improperly stored or because in transit that there's greater risk of it being spilled?
Well, Mr. Chairman, clearly it is the desire of the people who watchdog this, the department, to try and get as much hazardous waste out of the general environs of the state and into a facility that has liners that are this thick and 2-3 feet thick with all kinds of very specific requirements as to the density of the clay and the polyethylene and everything else. And so the answer is yes, I'm sure, depending on the kind of waste and its ability to traverse into the groundwater and that kind of thing, it clearly is in the state's best interest to try and move it to a facility that can handle it.
Chair Messerly, members of the committee, maybe just a little bit more detail. This facility, as everybody knows, is on the other side of the mountains. The average rainfall is about 9 inches a year. Yeah, groundwater is at greater than 200 feet in depth. The facility has operated for over 25 years without serious problems or a significant incident. We have no expectation that we'll have any problems in the future.
Over the period of time it's operated, it's generated over $50 million in disposal fees or hazardous waste management fees to the state of Oregon. It provides the nearest acceptable place for management of the waste for all of the businesses on the west side of the Cascades. And any alternative to them is a longer transportation route. It's a greater risk to haul that stuff by the roads. And anything that goes from western Washington or western Oregon would go down Highway I-84 to Idaho. The Idaho facility is just off I-84, and so you're adding another 250 miles to the transportation route, which increased cost and increased risk. And we also have rail capability that takes it right to the facility that provides another mechanism for a cheaper cost and a reduced risk to get the waste there. So that's kind of my take on the background of the facility.
Senator Duke.
That helps some, and that's what I was trying to get to earlier. Now, your transport vehicles are to what standard in case of a collision?
Chair Messerly, Senator Dukes, the transport vehicles have to satisfy U.S. Department of Transportation requirements for transport of hazardous waste, and there are specific requirements that has to be labeled in a proper way. Most of them are contained and sealed so that they have no ability to leak. Hazardous waste, in order to be disposed at Arlington, can't have any liquids in it. It has to be a solid waste. If it's liquid, it has to be drummed. It can't be in the larger bulk containers. The rail materials are brought by sealed gondolas.
In case of accident, we would be fairly well. We, the public, would be fairly well protected. The environment would be fairly well protected. Arlington is a great facility, and it's very well done, and it's been handled very well over the years. It's just that it seems to me at this point that what we're talking about is the need to protect. I'm not sure what. I mean, Representative Johnson's questions were good. I thought we needed a place in Oregon and Washington because there wasn't ample capacity. And now I'm hearing there must be ample capacity in Idaho if that's where it's all going to go. So then I thought, well, it must be cheaper to do it here. But apparently we're ratcheting down our fees to see if we can be the lowest bidder in the Northwest. And I'm struggling here. I appreciate your comments, but if it sounds like it's not going to break business to go to Idaho and you can transport it safely and Idaho has the capacity, then all of these things that I thought of were reasons why we had to have it here in Oregon have gone by the wayside, and so I'm just a little bit lost.
Senator Dukes, This started out as in the mid 70s as a arrangement or an agreement between Washington and the state of Oregon that Oregon would site and permit a hazardous waste disposal facility, that Washington would site and permit a low level radioactive disposal facility, and that's always kind of been the agreement and the compact carried forward. The Arlington facility, in my view, you know, were I a generator, is a much preferable facility to go to. Waste Management is one of the largest environmental service organizations in the United States.
There is a
substantial amount of financial wherewithal that stands behind that company. The financial assurance that we have to post for our facility in case anything ever did go wrong, and it never has, but the financial assurance that we have to post for that facility is in multiple millions of dollars. It's hard in a public hearing to characterize your competition, and I'm not going to do that. But again, were I a generator, I would pick Arlington to go to because of the company, because of the over 25 years worth of history. But the problem is that there will be some people
that if a disposal, if there's a disposal fee differential between Idaho and Oregon, they will go to the lowest cost place. And because waste has decreased so much over the years, especially recently because of aluminum companies being down, it has gotten to be a very competitive business. We run a very good facility, and we want to continue to run a very good facility, but we have to be able to compete on an economic level playing field, and we are not trying to obtain an advantage with the disposal fees. We're only trying to maintain the same disposal fees. If the fees were still $30 like they were 10 years ago, and Idaho's were still $30, we'd be functioning exactly fine. But because they started the battle, we've just always tried to match it to stay competitive so that we still have the ability to get as much waste as we can, but it's of a very reduced market.
Can waste management deliver to Idaho? I mean, are there, do they, does the Idaho Disposal Facility contract with a company to transport its waste with a different company? Waste management.
Senator Messerly, Senator Dukes, or Chair Messerly, Senator Dukes, our, from our experience, most of the people we deal with want to deal with us. And because of the guarantees in our contracts, because of the financial wherewithal of the company that stands behind those contracts, most of the people, whether we're great salesmen and have convinced them of that or whether they understand the company, there is cradle-to-grave liability for hazardous waste. So a generator that puts it into our landfill still has theoretical liability if something goes wrong with that. But if you've got a good company standing behind it, you don't worry about it. You can sleep nights.
But if the one in, at Arlington were to close, waste management could still haul the same materials that haul it out of it.
We don't haul it off. We don't truck ship.
Chair Messerly, Senator Dukes, my guess is what happened is the generators would just deal directly with Idaho or Utah or go to California or something like that. And I think that you would hear a strong cry of protest if that situation were to occur.
Let me suggest this. I do have, as I said, I do have two more people that want to testify. I'd like to get through the public hearing aspect of this, and I would suggest that Senator Dukes or anyone else on the committee that needs to sit down with Burroughs and his associates to talk in the halls, and we'll extend this till tomorrow. I think that would be the appropriate. So.
Okay.
Did you have any other statements?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I have one quick something to clarify something Mr. Burroughs just said. Chemical waste management doesn't transport hazardous waste. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. We used to have a trucking facility arm at the facility, and that we've sold that off. But I shouldn't say we.
So
they
if I
sold
were a generator, I'd have to hire a common carrier.
You have to. You hire. You've got a common carrier that has this very special U.S. DOT license. I mean, isn't it just, you know, Charlie's Truck Company? it's somebody that knows what they're doing in this stuff.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, I'd like to call Catherine Bonetta and John Ledger. And we have 7 minutes left before we have to begin.
You go first. Okay. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm John Ledger, Associated Oregon Industries. I'll be quite brief because we're running out of time, I know. First of all, on the on the hazardous waste Arlington fee bill, we do support that bill. What would happen if that facility were not there? First of all, they don't just close. Like, you just can't come and dig them up and move them. They're there forever, and they have very sophisticated monitoring systems, and they're kind of amazing to go through. Because they have all kinds of monitoring systems and analytical equipment. So you'd still have it there. And what would happen, certainly, with the lack of competition, the fees would go up in Idaho. And we'd end up paying more and transporting further over the roads, and we'd still have the facility there. So I know it's a difficult thing, but what I would see would be costs go up and also risk go up. And you'd still have the facility in Arlington. It won't go away. On Senate Bill 196, a couple of quick things. There's a proposal in there to raise fees, I think 22%. We're fine with that. That represents about a cost of living increase, and we've always encouraged the agency to do that, and we would actually prefer them to see them get cost of living increases caught up, because we don't think they should be punished for deferring them when they can, which they did for many years here. They also have a fee for registration. We support that also. That's a one-time fee. We believe the agency is hurting for money fairly badly, and we believe it is a very good agency, and they work hard. I just want to say something real quickly in closing about technical assistance. The agency has been criticized sometimes from the outside that they do not do enough enforcement. One of the things they stress to kind of combat that is they do a lot of technical assistance, and that's very important to our members, especially some of our smaller ones, that it's very difficult to go out and figure this stuff out yourself. Although, you know, on the hazardous waste side, it's not as prevalent, but I know you're looking at technical assistance in other programs. For instance, in the water programs, we're looking at standards that protect to a level of a cancer risk of 1 in 1 million. Federal requirements are just 100,000. We're actually 10 times more strict than required by the federal government. And we think in return for that, we'd like to stay competitive, and technical assistance does help that. On air programs, you're going to see a new air program come in, toxics. It's not required by the federal government. We support that also. But again, we do like to keep competitive, and we think technical assistance helps that. So we have been, it's been sort of the pattern over the last couple of years, as we get technical assistance, other things to keep the businesses competitive, and in return, we're more strict than federal standards, and that's been acceptable to the business community. And with that, that's all I have.
Let me just ask you very quickly, Mr. Ledger, so what is your position on the fees generated by enforcement? Would you prefer that to be in general fund or in the...
Mr. Chairman, I think it is in general fund.
Would you prefer it stays there?
I think if it's if it comes in and it says this is... it's right now it's in general fund. And what it does is this simply diverts it before it hits the general fund. As long as they get the money, we'd be most comfortable with it coming out of the general fund, because then there's a little break there. But it's very important to us that they get the technical assistance money.
Thank you. Representative Johnson?
No, you asked my question.
Catherine? We've got about 3 minutes left before we have to adjourn.
I can meet that challenge, Chair Messerly. For the record, Catherine Vanatta, Northwest Pulp and Paper Association. I'm here today to support Senate Bill 196. If you look on the list that you were handed, I was a member of the work group that sat down and tried to figure out how to restructure that program given the constraints of declining revenue into the program and maintaining state delegation of the federal program. And we structured the package the way we could, the way we did, because we wanted to ensure that technical assistance was continued into the future. And we knew that the competition for general fund revenue would be very, very heavy down here, and we wanted to make sure that by diverting the money from the penalties that we would still be allowed that. Whether we go with Representative Morgan's suggestion of making sure that that money does come in through general fund for technical assistance or whether it's diverted, I would strongly suggest that. A lot of the committee members believe that technical assistance resulted in net environmental benefit, in that the people that needed the technical assistance were then able to do the proper things on the ground that resulted in control of hazardous waste. And you should realize that the technical assistance usually goes mostly to small businesses, not large businesses like I represent, but it's the smaller businesses that might not know all of the rules and have a full-time environmental person devoted to hazardous waste. So I would suggest that you would accept Senate Bill 196.
Thank you. Questions?
Comments? With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 196A and House Bill 2644A. Open the work session on Senate Bill 196A and set that over till tomorrow. Close the work session on Senate Bill 196A. Open the work session on House Bill 2644A. Set that over until tomorrow. Close the work session on House Bill 2644A. Open the work session on House Bill 5060. Set that over until tomorrow. close the work session on House Bill 5060. With that, we'll adjourn the committee meeting.
Sounds good to me.
Did you have a schedule for tomorrow?
You would be working the budget tomorrow.